Hello and welcome to your GCSE Geography Revision Podcast. Today we're diving into one of the most exam important topics you'll face, meeting the demands for energy resources and how different stakeholder groups intervene in that process. This topic sits within the Challenge of Resource Management unit and comes up regularly in exams. Understanding it well could be the difference between a grade 4 and a grade 7. So let's get into it. First, let's set the scene. The world needs energy, lots of it. We use energy to heat our homes, power our factories, fuel our transport, and run our digital devices. Global energy demand has been rising for decades, projected to keep rising as populations grow and more countries industrialise. The big question is, where does that energy come from and who gets to decide? Energy resources fall into two broad categories: non-renewable resources, coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear power, are finite. They will run out. Renewable resources, solar, wind, hydroelectric, geothermal, and tidal, are naturally replenished and produce far fewer greenhouse gas emissions. The challenge for society is managing the transition from heavy reliance on non-renewables toward a more sustainable energy mix. And this is where stakeholders come in. A stakeholder is any individual, group, or organisation with an interest in, or affected by, a particular decision. In the context of energy resources, we have several key stakeholder groups, and they often have very different, sometimes conflicting, attitudes. Let's go through them. First, governments. National governments are perhaps the most powerful stakeholders. They set energy policy, sign international agreements, and control subsidies and taxation. A government's attitude is shaped by multiple priorities: energy security, making sure the country has enough power; economic growth, energy is the engine of industry; environmental commitments, particularly under the Paris Agreement of 2015, which committed countries to limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius; and political popularity, since energy prices affect voters directly. Governments can support renewables through feed-in tariffs, which pay households for generating their own electricity, or through carbon taxes that make fossil fuels more expensive. Second, energy companies. Their primary driver is profit. Large oil and gas companies have historically invested heavily in fossil fuels, but many are now investing in renewables too, partly because of changing regulations, and partly because renewable energy is becoming increasingly cost competitive. The cost of solar energy fell by around 89% between 2010 and 2020. Third, local communities. People who live near energy infrastructure have very direct concerns. Will this affect my property value? Will it create jobs? Will it damage the local environment? Local communities can be strongly in favour of energy projects if they bring employment, but can also be strongly opposed, a phenomenon sometimes called NIMBYism, which stands for not in my backyard. Fourth, environmental NGOs. Groups like Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth campaign for a rapid transition away from fossil fuels. They highlight links between fossil fuel combustion, carbon dioxide emissions, and climate change. They use public campaigns, legal challenges, and lobbying to shape public opinion and hold governments to account. Fifth, international bodies like the United Nations and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They produce research, set targets, and facilitate international agreements. The Paris Agreement, signed in 2015 by 196 countries, is the most significant example. The UN's Sustainable Development Goal number 7 calls for affordable and clean energy for all by 2030. And finally, individual consumers. Our choices about energy, whether we install solar panels, switch to a green energy tariff, or reduce our consumption, collectively have a significant impact. So we have six main stakeholder groups, all with different priorities, different levels of power, and often conflicting views. Examiners love questions that ask you to compare these perspectives, so make sure you can articulate the key concerns of each group clearly.
Now, let's look at two crucial case studies, because examiners will always ask you for named examples. You need one developed country and one emerging or developing country. I'm going to give you Germany and India. Learn these in detail. Germany is our developed country example. Germany has pursued one of the most ambitious energy transitions in the world, known as the Energiewende, which translates as energy transition. The policy was formally launched in 2000 with the Renewable Energy Sources Act, which introduced feed-in tariffs, guaranteeing above-market prices for renewable electricity fed into the grid. This incentivised households, farmers, and businesses to invest in solar panels and wind turbines. The results have been impressive. By 2023, approximately 46% of Germany's electricity came from renewable sources, primarily wind and solar. Germany has over 30,000 wind turbines and more than 2 million solar installations. The renewable energy sector employs around 200,000 people. However, the Energiewende has not been without challenges. Germany simultaneously decided to phase out nuclear power, a decision accelerated after the Fukushima disaster in Japan in 2011, and to phase out coal by 2038. This has created a complex balancing act. In the short term, Germany has sometimes had to rely more heavily on natural gas, particularly following the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022, which disrupted gas supplies. Energy prices rose sharply, causing significant public concern. Different stakeholders in Germany have had very different views. The federal government has been broadly supportive of the transition, seeing it as both an environmental necessity and an economic opportunity. Energy companies initially resisted, but have increasingly invested in renewables. Local communities near wind farms have sometimes opposed new installations on landscape grounds. Environmental NGOs have generally supported the transition, but criticised the slow pace of coal phase-out. Now let's turn to India, our emerging economy example. India faces a very different set of challenges. With a population of over 1.4 billion people, India has enormous energy needs. Around 200 million people still lack reliable access to electricity. India is also the world's third largest emitter of greenhouse gases, heavily dependent on coal, which provides around 70% of its electricity. India's approach to sustainable energy management has been shaped by two competing priorities: development, getting electricity to everyone, and sustainability, reducing emissions and meeting international commitments. In 2010, India launched the National Solar Mission, part of the National Action Plan on Climate Change. The mission set ambitious targets for solar energy deployment. By 2022, India had achieved 175 gigawatts of renewable energy capacity, ahead of its original target. India has now set a target of 500 gigawatts of renewable energy capacity by 2030. The Pavagada Solar Park in Karnataka state is a powerful example. Completed in 2019, it covers 53 square kilometres and has a capacity of 2,000 megawatts, making it one of the largest solar parks in the world. Crucially, the land was leased from local farmers, who received guaranteed rental income, providing economic benefits to local communities. However, India still faces significant challenges. Coal remains central to its energy mix, because it is cheap and reliable, and millions of jobs depend on the coal industry. The government has to balance the demands of environmental groups and international bodies pushing for rapid decarbonisation against the needs of coal-dependent communities and the imperative to provide affordable electricity to a rapidly growing economy. The contrast between Germany and India illustrates a key geographical concept: the principle of common but differentiated responsibilities. All countries share responsibility for addressing climate change, but developed countries, which industrialised first and emitted most of the historical greenhouse gases, have a greater responsibility and more resources to act quickly. Emerging economies like India argue that they should not be penalised for wanting the same development that rich countries already achieved.
Right, let's talk exam technique, because knowing the content is only half the battle. You need to know how to use it. The most common mistake candidates make on this topic is failing to distinguish between different stakeholders. If a question asks you to explain the attitudes of different groups towards an energy project, you must give genuinely different perspectives. Don't just say everyone is either for or against. A government might support a wind farm because of renewable energy targets, while a local community opposes it because of visual impact on the landscape, while an environmental NGO supports it but wants faster deployment. Those are three distinct, nuanced positions, and that's what earns marks. The second most common mistake is generalising without named examples. If a question asks about how countries manage energy resources sustainably, you must name specific countries and give specific details. Saying Germany has invested in renewables is a start, but saying Germany's Energy Wende policy introduced feed-in tariffs in 2000, leading to 46% renewable electricity by 2023, that's the kind of specific, detailed knowledge that reaches the higher levels of the mark scheme. Third mistake, confusing sustainable management with exploitation methods. The question might ask about management strategies, things like feed-in tariffs, carbon taxes, international agreements, community energy schemes, not just about how energy is extracted. Make sure you're answering the right question. Now, let's talk command words. These are the words at the start of a question that tell you what to do. Describe means give features or characteristics. No explanation needed. Explain means give reasons. Use connective phrases like this means that, as a result, therefore, and because. Assess means weigh up evidence and make a judgment. Evaluate means consider strengths and weaknesses and reach an overall conclusion. To what extent means give a balanced argument and then state how far you agree. For longer questions, typically 6, 9, or 12 marks, use the PEEL structure. Point, evidence, explanation, link. State your point clearly, back it up with specific evidence, explain the significance, and link back to the question. Now, for your quickfire recall quiz, I'll ask the questions, pause the podcast, and try to answer before I give you the answer. Ready? Question 1. Name two renewable energy sources. Answer: any two from solar, wind, hydroelectric, geothermal, tidal, or biomass. Question 2. What does Energy Wende mean, and which country is it associated with? Answer: energy transition. It's Germany's national energy policy. Question 3. What percentage of Germany's electricity came from renewables by 2023? Answer: approximately 46%. Question 4. What is India's renewable energy capacity target by 2030? Answer: 500 gigawatts. Question 5. What does NIMBY stand for? Answer: not in my backyard. Used to describe local opposition to energy projects. Question 6. Which international agreement committed countries to limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius? Answer: the Paris Agreement, signed in 2015. Question 7. Name one environmental NGO that campaigns on energy issues. Answer: Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, or WWF. Any of these is correct. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and review that section of your notes. To wrap up, this topic is all about the tension between energy demand and sustainable management, played out through the competing interests of different stakeholder groups. Remember your six stakeholders: governments, energy companies, local communities, environmental NGOs, international bodies, and individual consumers. Remember your two case studies: Germany's Energy Wende and India's National Solar Mission. And remember to use specific facts and figures in your exam answers. You've got this. Good luck with your revision, and I'll see you in the next episode.